a new entry into the whole world of audio adventures is my friend Jeremy McCarter, who's sitting here, who drove in on this snowy night, who left his two kids at home to come in here tonight. He came to Chicago in 2014.
That's right.
For a variety of reasons, from the East Coast, where he collaborated on a book with Lin-Manuel Miranda, wrote another book called Young Radicals, has a lovely wife, and decided to come to Chicago because he has in-laws nearby who can help take care of the kids, basically. You've fallen in love with Chicago.
I have.
And its culture, and that has manifested itself in first something called the Make Believe Association, which I first encountered about a year, maybe a year and a half ago.
Yep.
It is now a podcast. Tell me about the seed of the Make Believe Association.
Sure. It's a couple of seeds sort of blended together. But Make Believe Association is a new nonprofit production company. You know, my background is in the live theater, but I've always loved radio, loved sound storytelling. And it occurred to me when I moved here and sort of caught the whiff of Chicago's cultural energy, which wants people to make new things, that it would be fun to try to make something that is going to pull from the kind of theatrical storytelling that I love, but also take advantage of the fact that all of us are walking around with theaters in our ears now because of podcasts. And so Make Believe, what we try to do is we create audio dramas, which are like radio plays for podcast listeners. And then there's this civic piece to it, too, which is that I think that there's a way that stories create a crossroads where we can encounter each other and we can have a conversation about something beyond just the most horrible news of the last 12 hours, which is where we spend most of our time, right?
Well, I think the interesting thing is you described it to me before. Some theaters, all theaters maybe, have participated in what are called talkbacks at the end of various productions where it's like, yeah, I thought the guy who drove a cab should have been older. And that's not exactly what I'm into. It is a much more a wider kind of conversation about the meaning of the play and the meaning of various things. How have those gone so far?
They've been fantastic. I mean, when we do the tapings of these performances for the podcast, we do them for a small live audience. And when the actors are done doing what they do at their music stands, we take a little break and we come back. And then I go on stage, and if there's someone else wrote it, then I sit down with the person who wrote it, and we get the audience talking. And it is not a chance for the audience to sort of say whatever's on their minds and performance they like.
Like I once was in a cab, and the driver was not nice. I mean, that's basically what you get.
A lot of forethought goes into the kind of conversation we want to have, and the goal is all of it, every aspect of the company is kind of a test to see how collaborative can we be, how can we make each other smarter and more creative. And that's certainly true in the collaborative way we write the scripts, which is in a writer's room situation. Obviously the actors are collaborating with the director in rehearsals and in performance, and I want the people in those conversations to be trying to make each other smarter. And when the conversation really gets popping, which has happened a lot this season, that's the magic that happens.
Well, and that too is going to be available on the podcast.
It is, yeah. So anyone who goes to makebelieve.fm to download one of the first two that we've put online so far, you'll get the performance, and then at the end you'll get some highlights of the conversations that we had.
The first season is four of these audio dramas,
right? It's four full productions, and then some other, you know, some introductory things and trailers.
Sure, we're going to play some. Let's give them a sample. Just a sample of that, the trailer thing. It's only a minute and 23 seconds, ladies and gentlemen, so stay tuned.
Once upon a time,
meaning like now,
a gifted group of storytelling artists came together at a crossroads.
Meaning Chicago.
They were actors, poets,
playwrights, composers, designers,
directors
in Chicago.
And they produced a season of audio dramas,
which are like radio plays,
but without the radio,
sin radio,
titled
Grown Folks Fables.
The programs in the season are new adaptations of old stories.
Stories drawn from the traditions of people in our city.
Why fables and folk tales?
Because they've got everything.
Action.
Come, the orchard's a trap.
Comedia.
Oh, Taruga, it's a joke.
Dragons.
Dragones.
Each story.
Cada historia.
Every story.
Every story.
Is a crossroads.
Una encrucijada.
Different kinds of people find each other there.
That's why these audio dramas were recorded at live tapings.
front of live audiences,
followed by very live conversations. Yeah,
all of us here identify.
We're familiar with.
Thought about a lot of things in experiencing the story.
Stories entertain.
They provoke.
They shape our world. If only we could see it.
Or hear it.
Or hear it.
And all of it.
Todo. All of it.
All of it.
Is make-believe.
Is make-believe.
Is make-believe. Subscribe to the podcast now.
You can do that at makebelieve.fm. That was a better conversation than you and I just had. That, given that that's produced and there's cool music behind it, but that really gives the essence. I have a couple more clips. I wanted to play Jeremy McCarter a couple, you know, sort of extended pieces from the first two that are available, Brava and Bro Rabbit.
Yep.
It just doesn't. These are shows, ladies and gentlemen, that fly in the face of our short attention span world. These are shows to listen to. This is not something you can listen to it in a car, but this is not some quick hit. It's not a, you know, I hear the, and the way much of media is going here, the top five reasons to listen to radio or something. These are full-blown productions. What's the length?
They are all 40 or 45 minutes long. And then the conversation clip, so it looks longer than it is, but... But, you know, to me, it just feels like these are, it's not, you know, you sit on your couch and turn on Netflix and it just kind of happens. Like, it does require a certain amount of attention. But to me, I mean, look, the thing I love about theater and why I've been involved with it for 20 years is because of that imaginative experience you get to have. Yeah. The actors give you a little and you supply the rest. And in a sense, like an audio drama is that, but more so because...
See, it also implies to me and begs attention... listening, where you do set a time. And the great thing about podcasts is you can make that time anytime. You can make it 1:30 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, 8:30 at night. It reminds me of the days when people used to gather around their radios, the family, Uncle Bernie from the attic, drunk Uncle Bernie would come down and listen
drunk
to the
Uncle
Lone
Bernie.
Ranger, or to the vast variety of theatrical presentations on radio.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, look, there's something very, very essential to what it means to be a human being, that we sit around and share stories and talk about them. Like, if we didn't have the capacity for that, none of us would be here. And in a sense, like, what Make Believe is trying to do is to create a space where we can do that again.
But isn't part of it, too, and I may be wrong, but part of it is to create that kind of community of listeners, too. Yeah. That the ideal thing is to listen to one of the four first season presentations with somebody else, because that, too, is a way that the conversation can extend beyond the conversation that's available on air. We got to take a commercial break. We'll be back. We're talking all the way with Jeremy McCarter till a quarter to, and then I'll let him go home to his family. It's makebelieve.fm. It's a great website. There are two of the four first season presentations up. Welcome back. I'm with Jeremy McCarter, who is, I don't know, the executive something, the creator of the Make Believe Association, which has launched its first audio drama, I think, in the middle of January, called Brava. Its second one shortly thereafter called Bra Rabbit. They are two audio theatrical adventures. They are recorded live. They feature a pretty big gathering of Chicago area talent, not just the writers, but the producers, the sound people, all the
everybody,
the actors and actresses. There are two up now. Two more are coming very soon. I know you recorded them last year, but why put them? I don't know anything about podcasts, but four almost like back to back. You want to give everybody everything right away.
Yeah, everything about this season is some form of experiment, right?
Sure.
And one of the things that is experimental is, well, what is the right tempo for releasing these things? And it just felt to us that. That because there's so much carryover from one to the next in terms of the things that people are interested in talking about, that, well, let's just try to like roll them out and watch what happens. And so two are up. The third one is The Lost Books of the Odyssey. That'll be out end of this month. And
that is written by you.
I did the adaptation of a novel that I really loved from about 10 years ago by Zachary Mason, same name. It's the series of riffs on the Odyssey. So it's inventive and funny. And so that one's end of February. And then the middle of March, this Lorraine Hansberry one act that basically no one ever
does. Why is that?
Rick, I wish I knew, but it just doesn't get done much. It's called What Use Are Flowers? A Fable. She subtitled it A Fable. So yeah. Belongs in our season of Fables.
Lorraine
and
Hansberry, of course, the ill-fated die way too young author of A Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
And a Chicagoan, too, and a remarkable, not just a remarkable woman, that whole story, it reminds me of, you know, Jonathan Larson and Rent and that tragic kind of end to it. Let's go back for a second, Jeremy McCarter, to the Rick Hogan notion of gathering around and listening to, you know, there are... I think the figure in this, I just wrote a piece about podcasts, there's something like 600,000 podcasts available right now. Something in that grotesque neighborhood. Many of them are nothing but ego parades for somebody who once was a very funny in third grade and remembers that he was told he was funny in third grade, or someone who has a wonderful idea about what we should do with government in the United States. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised there isn't a podcast called Build a Wall and then another one called Don't Build a Wall. Who knows?
I think it's pretty likely that both of those podcasts exist.
There's almost no question. So you have to be pretty discriminating out there. But if you are, you can create a kind of audio world for yourself. There are some very good podcasts out there. I like Malcolm Gladwell's podcast. I think that's very smart. And now, makebelieve.fm to add to this, but to listen to it with... You know, I'm not saying have listening parties or gather, but just say, hey, why don't you and I, or why don't you and I and Betty and Louise get together and listen to this? Let's see what it's like.
Well, so part of the rationale from the very beginning was these stories are a way of bringing people together.
Yeah.
And it's tricky. There's this bottleneck because then we're releasing them on the internet, which is this alienating force in all of our lives. So here's a story. We decided, because, you know, of course we decided this, that we were going to throw a party on the eve of launching Brava, the first one we put online. And so we had this party at the National Museum of Mexican Art. We had a lot of people sitting around. We decided that we would celebrate by listening to Brava. And so we announced we're going to do this listening party as our launch event. And it was only a couple of days after we decided this is what we're going to do that we kind of looked at each other like, what's a list? Like, what are we going to do? Yeah. Like, now we're going to have like 85, 90 people sitting around listening to something coming out of speakers. Like, what have we just set ourselves up for? And so we, you know, people sat on three sides. There was this little table in the center. We put some candles on the table to evoke the campfire where 100,000 years.
Story, yes,
that's right.
Pre-Twitter, like, where the first stories
most
were
of
told.
The stories humans have heard since there have been humans have been around a campfire, and it turned out it was fantastic. The experience of listening to a story with a group of people and then having the chance to talk about it afterwards. We had no formal talking thing set up after that. We just people sort of got up and stuck around for a long time. And so you said about a listening party. Look, I would love that. I mean, talk@makebelieve.fm is the email address for the company. We, after that night, it just made us feel like we have started doing more to encourage people to find ways, whether it's in their living rooms, whether it's in a more formal setting, listen to these things with other people, because we know as a society that we are losing our avenues for interacting with other people. This great book from 20 years ago, Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam. And, you know, our stories and listening parties going to fix what's wrong with the world? Not entirely, but if there were lots of people doing this, then it would start to spin things back in the right direction, I think.
That's very incredibly ambitious. Ernie, let's hear another thing, because as articulate and entertaining as Jeremy and I are, the stuff on makebelieve.fm is even more so. Let's play that Why Talk About Stories.
I have this theory. We get stories all wrong.
A lot of us think that movies and novels, plays and songs offer a break, a diversion from the serious work of the world. And they do. I mean, who could get through a day without those things? Who would want to? But even as we're entertained, those novels and movies and plays are making us think in certain ways and feel in certain ways. And if you believe science, then what we do every day is determined, at least in part, by the way that we think and feel. When we see little kids playing, pretending they're in some world they've invented, we call what they're doing make-believe. And we say it dismissively, as if make-believe doesn't matter. Well, I'd propose that make-believe, the songs, the stories, everything that creative artists create, that matters a lot. Make-believe moves us, provokes us, changes us, and in changing us, changes the world. Or it can, anyway, if you do it right. I'm Jeremy McCarter. I'm the founder and executive producer of Make Believe Association. It's a new production company based in Chicago. Mainly, we're going to produce audio dramas, plays for your ears. They're from great actors, writers, directors, and composers. And we'll give audiences a chance to talk about them, to see if we can figure out together what those stories mean. The chance to talk with people that way? That's not as common as it ought to be.
Exactly. It is. It may sound redundant to you what Jeremy just said there because we've been talking about it, but you need to know that. The other thing, the one thing you don't mention in that, and I've listened to both of the first two, is these things are quite, quite entertaining. I mean, I don't want to dismiss that or give people the idea that this is some kind of, you know, a philosophy seminar at Yale or something. Right. It is far, far from it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said this. I've said this to all my collaborators in the company, and you know, the reason to do it is because it's a good time. Because
absolutely.
The stories are funny
no
and
question.
Suspenseful and sad, and if that doesn't happen, then the other stuff doesn't matter.
Can't happen.
And that's what we push for. You know, like I said, we developed the scripts in a writer's room, and the challenge was not to make it profound. The challenge was make it exciting, make it funny.
This was last year, and you sat in that in that room with Nate Marshall, who is the credited as the author of Br'er Rabbit, which is based on Br'er Rabbit, sort of based on, and Nancy Garcia Lorza, who wrote Brava.
Right.
You all three of you worked together in this room, working on both of them at the same time. Or you basically, I guess the three of you were trying to philosophically create this thing.
Right. Well, so the premise is that we think better and we create better when we do it with other people.
Sure.
Especially if they're not like us. And if that's the premise, then it just felt to me, because, you know, I can be sort of literal-minded sometimes, then we should just apply that everywhere. So we apply it in the way we think about who is going to be in the audience to talk about these things, and we apply it in the way that the scripts got written. And so Nate and Nancy and I spent half a year together. Each of us had a project that we were the lead writer on. But it just felt to me that, well, if the three of us are doing the same thing and we're all trying to figure out the best way to create an audio story, which is a relatively unusual way to write a play,
no question.
Then why don't we have the benefit of each other's insights? You know, we'll learn this together. We'll make each other better. My adaptation of The Lost Books was developed that way, in part because I wanted, in a sense, to test the machine on myself to make sure I wasn't putting them through some like horrendous process. And it was fantastic. Like, I miss it. Like, it was hard. It was hard work to like get these scripts right, but it was also like hilarious. You know, we laughed like crazy.
Oh,
we got really close. So part of the, I remember like as we were wrapping up in the writer's room, it was time to go into production, just feeling like, you know, if the audiences have half as much fun with these things as we did in trying to figure them out together, we're going to be onto something here.
Well, and obviously you felt empowered enough or knowledgeable enough to go off on your own to do that third one, yes? Or was that part of this process, too?
The Lost Books adaptation?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, I had the incredible good fortune to spend 5 years on the artistic staff of the Public Theater when I lived in New York. And I was, you know, I spent those 5 years at the elbow of Oscar Eustace, my boss and friend, the artistic director, who, you know, is by... you know, acclamation, the best dramaturg in the world. And a dramaturg, for people who don't work in the theater, the dramaturg is the one who sits there and makes the plays better, gets the playwright to do their best work. And I got to watch him do that. And, you know, I feel very blessed to have gotten to do that. And I did think of part of my job as being to try to apply the things that I learned from Oscar in the service of Nate and Nancy's scripts and in the one that I was trying to do, too.
I'm telling you, so far, so good. Go to makebelieve.fm. Welcome back. Ernie Skatman is doing his best to provide bumps for this show, and I don't bring anything, but he's a great engineer. Got a few more minutes with Jeremy McCarter, author and head of... the creator of something called the Make Believe Association, which now is a gathering of many, many Chicago talents into its first season of audio theatrical offerings at makebelieve.fm. One of the interesting things, Jeremy, about this first season, which has started with Brava and Bra Rabbit, two of the four shows of this first season, it goes... for me, to the kind of democratization of theater, because theater in this town, as many of us know, and anybody who goes to theater is basically a very... I just saw a Chris Jones review where people are paying $95 to go see some crap show based on the television show Friends. And I'm saying that's not my idea of theater, but it is a mostly white, mostly moneyed crowd that goes to theater here. And that, though, if you have money and you are white, you can certainly enjoy everything at makebelieve.fm. But this is addressing the larger community that is Chicago.
Part of the reason to do it is to try to create a space where lots of different kinds of people are going to encounter each other. You know, I've been struck since I moved here by the, you know, there is the segregation that exists in the city.
No question.
And so if the stories are going to reflect the cultural kaleidoscope of Chicago, then how do we try to make that extend to the audience as well? And so what we ultimately came up with is, well, obviously we're not going to charge people to be in the live tapings. But then just stopping there, it doesn't really solve anything.
Right.
And so...
Yeah, that doesn't solve anything.
Yeah. And so what we do is then it just kind of... was this, you know, light bulb moment about a year ago. We just let the artists decide. So if the company of Brava, the Nancy Garcia Loza's incredible adaptation of this Mexican folktale about a brave girl who you know, journeys through a land of monsters. You just said to that cast and to Nancy and to the director, Laura Alcala Baker, and to the, you know, who do you want to share this with? You decide. But also to my board, and also to, so that, you know, you get, because we are, what we're democratizing is the guest list.
Yeah.
And then when you have 15 people deciding who's going to be there, you end up with a room that doesn't look like the room that you just described, because when we are pulling from all of our social networks, the different corners of Chicago where all of us live, you know, I can't claim that we reflect, you know, the entirety, we can't reflect the entirety of Chicago, but we do reflect our Chicago.
Well, but the other thing is, the audience you're really getting, to my mind, is anybody who knows how to use a computer and can type makebelieve.fm.
Right.
That's the crowd.
There's that too, yeah. And it's also, and it is to say, you know, I just saw the study that made me really happy, that the demographics of podcast listening in America is now pretty close to the demographics of America.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Now, one of the other things, I want to mention that everybody, nobody does this for free. which you are not a nonprofit, and you do pay.
We are a nonprofit.
Okay, well, yeah. But you still, you're a nonprofit that will pay these actors and these engineers and these kids and people like Ernie to engineer these things.
We do. Yeah. Look, Make Believe is a nonprofit. Like, we exist entirely on the basis of foundations and individuals who are willing to make tax deductible contributions, which you can do at makebelieve.fm. But for me, I've been in the nonprofit world a long time, and I've seen how it works, that, you know, when people are doing something for reasons because they believe in the cause, that somehow then they don't need to eat.
Yeah.
That's false. And so from the very beginning, I told my board, that's not how this company is going to work. If we get the chance to build something from scratch, from the ground up, then we only get to have one set of ideals. And so if we're going to treat people with dignity, we're going to make artists feel that we respect the work that they do, then we're going to pay people. We're not going to have unpaid interns. We're going to use, you know, we're a SAG after a signatory, like, we, you know, and it makes the fundraising harder.
Sure.
But it also means you sleep slightly better at night because you feel like we're doing what we can to try to, you know, be as respectful of people and their time and their talent as we can be.
You, Bravo premiered, I think, and just after the start of the year, somewhere in early January.
Yeah.
What has been your reaction to the reaction to the podcast?
The reaction's been amazing. I mean, we're hearing from people all over the country who've been moved by it. We heard it, anyone who goes and listens to Brava,
as you should.
Yeah. We had these beautiful conversations at the live tapings afterwards where women in particular were standing up and saying that this story is reminding them of someone in their family, yeah. Someone that they know.
Yeah.
And that has continued, you know, now that it's out there in the world.
Now, you do want to, obviously you want to. You want to hear from people. I mean, you would love to get emails and correspondence from people after they listen to this thing, because it's very hard. A lot of people, I listen to a podcast and that's gone and I'm gone.
Right. Yeah, sure. I mean, that channel is open. talk@makebelieve.fm is, you know, you can email us. You can reach out to us on Facebook or on Facebook too, Twitter. Yeah, Twitter. Do people really talk on Twitter?
No.
Not really. Yeah.
Not really. No.
Not really. But we want to hear from people. And we also, and like I said, like, we're the most exciting thing to us is people who want to, like, listen with other people who feel like it's not just going to live on the internet. They're going to take it off the internet.
You amaze me on a number of levels, in that, especially in the fact that you have a recently born child and another child who's not much older than recently born. How do you find the time?
Powerful drugs. That's how I do it. No, I'm kidding. It's hard. It's not easy. You know, it's to find the time to try to have my family responsibilities and be running a startup.
Yeah.
But
you don't seem anywhere near as tired or frazzled as you did when you were finishing your second book, Young Radicals. You were really frazzled then. You were really frazzled.
See, Rick, you have the baseline of my...
I do. Yeah,
my poor time management.
I'm his official biographer whenever he gets around to making that short. But it also seems that it's a good indication how excited you are by this and how energized.
That's energized. I mean, yeah, like Nate Marshall, Nancy Garcia Loza, these actors, like, I love working with these people and I love the work. Like, this is a crazy series of experiments to make this season happen, and it is happening, and the reception has been great. And, you know, to be honest, if we were taking big swings and missing, maybe it'd be harder, you know, to be getting by on not quite enough sleep, but it's been a blast.
Well, I must tell you, the first two that I've heard, the first two that are up and posted, Brava and Burrow Rabbit, are really remarkable achievements. I listened to them both about two or three times, and I could envision them on a stage, but the joy and pleasure of listening to them just by myself, not with a crowd, immense pleasure and fun. When's the third one? When's yours come out?
Lost Books of the Odyssey will be out end of this month.
And the Masterpiece of Lorraine Hansberry.
Then What Use Are Flowers will be middle of March. That'll be the big finale.
All right, I'll have you back on. We can come back on and talk some more about it after it's all
done. I would love to talk with you about that Hansberry project.
Me
too.
Amazing. She just fascinates me. Just fascinates me. Dead at, I don't know, 38?
34. Yeah.
Looks like my mind hasn't completely gone. Go to makebelieve.fm.
Or anywhere podcast. If you're a podcast listener, we're on every platform.
Every platform. Yep. No kidding. Just go to Make Believe FM.
The Make Believe Podcasts.
Or Google. Jeremy and I are not the greatest computer people. I think if you just Google Make Believe Plays, you'll get something.
Who knows, right? I can vouch for this. If you go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or anywhere you go and you search for Make Believe, you will find us. And you can subscribe, and then you'll get Lost Books as soon as it arrives.
Great to see you, Jeremy.
It's great to see you, Rick.
Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Bold, wonderful, wonderful thing. 600,000 podcasts, and this is among the top 10 already. I'll tell you that right now.